Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Millions of Americans were tuning in to see what one presidential candidate, a man running for the Republican presidential nomination, had to say about his own faith and its relationship to public policy. The speaker was none other than the former governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney. He was speaking at the Bush Presidential Library in College Station, Texas. It was, at least to date, the most now talked about speech of this presidential campaign, of any candidate of either party. We're going to be talking today about Mitt Romney's speech. If you had a chance to hear it, perhaps you've had a chance to read it, to think about it, I want to know if the governor said what you would have wanted him to say. If not, I'd like to hear what you would have had him say. Assuming the reality here is that we face a candidate giving this address who is himself a Mormon, who made very clear that he is a Mormon. He called it the faith of his fathers and his own faith. He said it's not a matter of convenience. It's a matter of his own deep belief. He is a Mormon speaking about how he would serve as president of the United States. Again, did the governor say what you would have wanted him to say, or would you have had him to say something else? Either way, give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK, and let us know your analysis of Governor Romney's speech. We'll be talking about it more in just a few moments. And I guarantee you it's going to be the most discussed speech, at least over the next several days, thus far of this presidential campaign. It's a good opportunity for Christians to think, because after all, this is not just about politics. It's not just about the presidential contest. It's not just about the Republican nomination. It's about the whole question of the role of religion, Christianity in public life, and the limits of where American evangelicals are willing to go when it comes to thinking about this issue with, for instance, a Mormon candidate. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some other issues in the news. This one ought to be getting more attention. The city of Philadelphia is evicting the Philadelphia Council, the Boy Scouts of America, over the issue of homosexuality. Actually, it's probably not only the issue of homosexuality, but also the fact that the Boy Scout oath includes an affirmation of God. Now, what makes this particularly significant is that this is no just a small town with something of an insignificant Boy Scout unit. This is, of course, the birthplace of the Boy Scouts in America. The particular council that is now being evicted from this public facility in Philadelphia is one of the most venerable in America, and it is the seventh largest even now in the country. Now, here's what happened. For the last several years, the city of Philadelphia has been putting pressure on the Boy Scouts because the city has a non-discrimination policy that requires anyone receiving any kind of support from the city or leasing city facilities to be absolutely non-discriminatory when it comes to matters of religion. And by the way, that would include atheism and sexual diversity and homosexuality in particular. The Boy Scouts, you know, have a policy that says that no scout or scout leader can be openly homosexual. The Scouts also have a policy of affirming a belief in God as a matter of the Boy Scout oath. Leaders there in Philadelphia said the clash stemmed from a duty to defend civil rights, but Ian Urbina, writing in the New York Times, says the Boy Scout officials said it was about preserving their culture, protecting the right of private organizations to remain exclusive, and defending traditions like requiring members to swear an oath of duty to God and prohibiting membership by anyone who is openly homosexual, period. Mr. Urbina then writes this next sentence: this week the Boy Scouts made their last stand and lost. Daryl Clark, representing the district where the building is located, he is a city councilman, said, at the end of the day, you cannot be in a city-owned facility being subsidized by the taxpayers and not have language in your lease that talks about non-discrimination. Negotiations are over. Now, there's a complication here that makes this even more interesting. The city of Philadelphia, at least as reported in the media, would have been willing for the Boy Scouts not to have changed their policy, so long as this Philadelphia Council of the Boy Scouts of America officially in the lease and publicly protested the position held by the national body. In other words, they could have stayed if they had said, we believe in non-discrimination, we believe in allowing homosexual scouts and homosexual scout leaders, we believe that atheists ought to be able to join without affirming a duty to God, but we are just going to say that as a matter of public policy and public statement so that we can continue to use these facilities. The Boy Scouts in Philadelphia did not. They are going to be evicted. The Boy Scouts erected the building, by the way. Since 1928, they've leased the land from the city for the token sum of $1 a year. City officials said the market value for renting the building is about $200,000 a year. They invited the Boy Scouts to remain as full-paying tenants. It looks like that's not going to happen. Now, here is the bottom line. The bottom line is that now you have an organization as venerable, as respected, as helpful as the Boy Scouts of America being kicked out of this facility in the city of Philadelphia because they will not allow homosexual scoutmasters and scouts or atheists who do not declare a duty to God within the organization. Now, when you think about the matter of non-discrimination law, just please keep this in mind. Please use this as an illustration to understand where this thing goes. It's very easy to look, whether you're a secular politician or a politician of the left, or for that matter, a politician of the right, to look at this kind of non-discrimination policy and say, you know, we can probably live with that. Well, this is an example of why these non-discrimination policies have unintended effects. Because after all, do you really mean to say that the Boy Scouts have to change their policy in order to be considered good citizens? Well, that's exactly what this decision is saying. The Boy Scouts have been under attack for the last decade or so precisely over these issues. And the reality is that the policy of the Boy Scouts of America is, let's just face it and be honest, the only policy that's going to add the support of the parents of the boys who are sending their boys to participate in Boy Scout activities. Let's just state the obvious here. You will have a different organization if you allow openly homosexual boys or scout leaders within the organization. You're talking about camping trips. You're talking about all kinds of things. You're talking about parents saying, I don't think so, when that happens. Now, if you are pushing the homosexual agenda, that then becomes an obstacle you can't live with. And so you have to target the Boy Scouts of America and any similar organization. You have to paint them as intolerant and repressive. Of course, you have to acknowledge at least the right of any private organization to establish its own rules. But for how long? For how long? That's the question. Once you have the political capital, and by the way, the vote to evict the Boy Scouts in this facility had only one negative vote on the Philadelphia City Council. Once you've reached that kind of political momentum, 16-1 vote, I think it's pretty clear that the culture has shifted, at least in Philadelphia. These politicians clearly are not fearing outrage from the citizens of Philadelphia at evicting the Boy Scouts. Now, let me just ask you, as you think about this, to rewind history, maybe just 20 years, could you imagine that a city councilman in Philadelphia would vote to evict the Boy Scouts 20 years ago? I don't think so. So something's changed, and I think we know what that something is. Speaking of changing, every once in a while you come across a news report that tells you that, the world's changed in ways maybe you didn't even understand. The New York Times Fashion and Style section on the front page has an article entitled, A Bundle of Joy Isn't Enough. It turns out that in some communities, in some social circles, fathers or husbands are now expected to present their wives and the mothers of their children with very expensive, and I underline the word very, in very expensive, gifts of jewelry when the mother gives birth to a child. This is the way it's reported by Thomas Fizi de Gira. He says that you have couples who are practicing this. You have mothers who are expecting it. He writes, in a more innocent age, new mothers generally considered their babies to be the greatest gift imaginable. Today, they are likely to want some kind of tangible bonus as well. The bonus goes by various names. Some call it the baby mama gift. Others refer to it as the baby bauble. But it's most popularly known, no kidding, folks, as the push present. The push as in, I saw the mother having been through the ringer and pushed out this blessed event, hereby claim my reward. Or push as in, I've delivered something special and now I'm pushing you to follow suit. Linda Murray, executive director of BabyCenter.com, says it's more and more an expectation of moms these days that they deserve something for bearing the burden for 9 months, getting sick, ruining their body. The guilt really gets piled on. A survey of more than 30,000 respondents by BabyCenter.com found that 38% of new mothers received a gift in connection with their child. Among pregnant mothers, 55% were bold enough to say they wanted one. About 40% of both groups, only 40%, said the baby was an ample reward. One mother said this: women can and do expect a thoughtful token of appreciation. It's a way to honor a mother giving her emotions, body, and hormones over to the baby for 9 months. She says it's an act of sacrifice. Well, you know, an act of sacrifice doesn't expect a baby bauble or a push present in return. I think most of the moms I know consider a healthy, wonderful baby to be the greatest gift they can receive on that day of birth. It's a whole new thing when Tiffany and company is deciding you need it for birthday as well. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
There are some for whom these commitments are not enough. They would prefer it if I would simply distance myself from my religion, say that it's more a tradition than my personal conviction, or disavow one or another of its precepts. That I will not do. I believe in my Mormon faith, and I endeavor to live by it. My faith is the faith of my fathers. I will be true to them and to my beliefs. Some believe that such a confession of my faith will sink my candidacy. If they're right, so be it. But I think they underestimate the American people. Americans do not respect believers of convenience. Americans tire of those who would jettison their beliefs, even to gain the world.
You're listening there to former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney speaking today at the George H.W. Bush Presidential Library in College Station, Texas. He was giving what may be, indeed, the most important speech of his political life. And I think the governor clearly recognized that. The audience recognized that. I think most of the news media recognized that. I hope by now many of you have had an opportunity, if not to hear the address, at least to hear about it. Because we need to have a conversation now among evangelical Christians of what we think about the address, what we think about the points that Governor Romney made, what we think about the idea not only of a Mormon in the White House, we've talked about that on this program, but of this particular man at this particular time with these particular beliefs running for president of the United States. Now, one of the things you heard there in that opening comment was Mitt Romney say that he will not disavow anything about Mormonism. He is not a Mormon, he says, of convenience. He says, by the way, that if this confession sinks his candidacy, so be it. But he says he doesn't think the American people will require that of a candidate who speaks of conviction. I want to know what you think about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Again, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Here with me in the studio is Dr. Russell Moore, Dean of the School of Theology and Senior Vice President of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and also the Director of the Carl Henry Institute for Evangelical Engagement. Russ Moore, did you hear what you hope to hear from Governor Romney?
I did. I heard someone who is saying that he's going to be able to exercise justice and wisdom in the White House. I think that's what we ought to be listening for. And also, he's not going to be obviously taking any direction from Salt Lake City when it comes to governing. I don't think any of us really believe that that would be the case. But he made it clear that he's somebody who holds his beliefs and he's not going to throw them overboard simply to be elected. Even when we vehemently disagree with those beliefs, you've got to respect that.
So let's go ahead and set the ground for this discussion. First of all, I believe that Mormonism as a system of faith is a false gospel that leads persons away from salvation.
Yes.
That indeed it is a seductive worldview that leads persons away from Jesus Christ and the only faith that saves.
Yes. And the central tenet of Mormonism is exactly what Satan is saying in the garden. You can become as gods. It is clearly outside the pale of Christianity and is satanic to the core. No doubt.
You know, I wrote a series of articles at beliefnet.com earlier this year, mm-hmm. in a debate with a Mormon thinker,
that's
Orson
right.
Scott Card, on this. And an awful lot of people said, well, you know, it's unconstitutional to make that kind of argument. Let's just be really clear. Heresy is not a matter of the U.S. Constitution.
That's exactly right. We don't have a test for religious belief for candidates. So you can't have in a state constitution, you can't be an Episcopalian if you're run for office. But that doesn't mean that you don't take those issues into account as a voter. You can take all kinds of things into account.
As an American, I have the right, and as a Christian theologian, I have the responsibility to speak very candidly about what I see as the false teachings, dangerous false teachings of Mormonism, and to make very clear it is not Christianity. But at the same time, some people immediately jump from that to believe thereby that I'm saying that he should not run for president and that Mitt Romney is never a candidate for whom I could vote. I did not say that.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I don't have a candidate yet for president. I'm looking at all of these candidates, but I can tell you this. The central verse for a candidate for president for us ought to be Romans 13 rather than John 3:16. It doesn't matter so much whether or not the candidate is regenerate as whether or not the candidate is going to exercise justice, if he's going to wield the sword, as Paul says, justly. And so I may vote for a man that I believe needs to have the gospel shared with him. And that's where I think the confusion often comes in. Christians sometimes want a president that they would also like to call as pastor. And God doesn't always work that way. You have Cyrus, you have just governors who are lost and who need to have the gospel shared with them. We ought to be able to hold those two things together at the same time.
Well, let's also do a review of American history for just a moment. Mm-hmm. If we were to line up every president of the United States from George Washington mm-hmm. to George W. Bush, I'm not certain how many of them have given us any kind of credible evidence of a regenerate nature of a personal faith in the Lord Jesus Christ.
And some who have been disastrous presidents. There are some presidents that one might like as a Sunday school teacher who one would hate as president of the United States. And so you have to take into account wisdom, justice, ability to carry out constitutionally what God has given as a responsibility. And not simply be, sometimes we're just so taken with, we want the president to be our hero in every sense. We got to be willing to say, sometimes you've got a lost man who can do the right thing. And sometimes you've got a brother in Christ who isn't able to protect us or who isn't able to make wise choices for the judiciary.
We'll be listening to more of Governor Romney's speech in the course of this program, but we want to go immediately to calls. Remember to join the program. Call 877-893-8255. Alan did, listening from Big Stone Gap, Virginia, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Alan.
Yes, sir. I agree with what you say about Mormonism, being a Christian myself. But I do admire his convictions not to back down from what he believes, just to be put in office.
You know, Alan, you really raise, I think, one of the most central things we need to talk about. And a little history lesson here might help us. Presidents generally did not talk about such things until the political process really required them to. Most centrally, 1960, when in September of that year, as the Democratic nominee for president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy went to Houston and spoke to the Houston Baptist Pastors Association. And, you know, just to summarize his speech, basically said, I'm a Catholic, but my Catholicism is not going to be a problem with my governing the nation. Don't worry that I'm going to be bringing Catholic social teaching into the presidency. Mitt Romney came out and said, and that's the very reason we chose the words that were played earlier, he came back and said, I am not a Mormon by convenience. He says here Americans tire of those who would jettison their beliefs even to gain the world. He made very clear that he is not going to distance himself from his religion. See, here's the bottom line. I think right now evangelical Christians would be far more comfortable with a Catholic candidate who said, I'm really seriously Catholic, mm-hmm. When it comes to understanding how that president would actually fulfill the office, rather than a Catholic who says, don't worry about my Catholicism.
Yeah, the problem with the Kennedys is not that they were too Catholic. The problem is they were not Catholic enough.
Yeah, when it certainly comes to social policy, right. I mean, just be thinking about everything from abortion to, well, you name it,
right.
In terms of both public and private morality, right. as is well attested here. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the kind of discussion intelligent Christians need to have. The entire news media is abuzz talking about this speech. You've got commentators and the talking heads, the commentariat, as they're known in some circles, giving their analysis. This is the opportunity for you to join the conversation. And this is an explicitly Christian context for this conversation. No apologies for that. How do you hear the governor's speech? Did you hear what you needed to hear? What did you not hear you wanted to hear? Could you hear anything that would change your mind about how you view this subject? 877-893-TALK, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mobile Program.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
I believe in a president whose views on religion are his own private affair. Neither imposed upon him by the nation, nor imposed by the nation upon him as a condition to holding that office.
My faith is grounded on these truths. You can witness them in Anne and my marriage and in our family. We're a long way from perfect, and we've surely stumbled along the way. But our aspirations, our values, are the self-same as those from the other faiths that stand upon this common foundation. And these convictions will indeed inform my presidency.
Just a bit of juxtaposition there. The first voice you heard was from 1960, Democratic Senator John Fitzgerald Kennedy of Massachusetts, then running for the presidency of the United States, the office to which he would be elected just a few weeks later. The second voice you heard is the former governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, now running for the Republican nomination for president of the United States. The juxtaposition has to do with how each of these men understood their task. John F. Kennedy faced a great deal of opposition because he was a Catholic. And the approach he took, and this is just a summary of that approach, a synopsis, was to say, I am Roman Catholic, but don't worry about it, because it's not really going to inform who I am, except in matters on which we all agree. Mitt Romney said, I am a Mormon. And in a far more emphatic sense, claimed it and said, I'm not embarrassed about this. I'm not holding to my Mormon beliefs as convenience. And these convictions will inform my presidency. I'd like to know what you heard from Mitt Romney's speech. Did you hear what you needed to hear as an evangelical Christian? Did you hear what you wanted to hear? If not, what was it that you did want to hear? And could you hear anything that would fundamentally change the way you look at this election? Because Mitt Romney didn't give this speech just because he had the itch to give a speech today. Clearly, in the context of this nomination race, he felt that he needed to give this speech. With me here in the studio is Russ Moore, who is the director of the Carl Henry Institute for Evangelical Engagement here at Southern Seminary, also dean of the School of Theology and vice president. I'm going to turn to him in just a moment. First, I want to call upon Sandra from New York, New York, listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Sandra.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. A pleasure to speak with you. I'm wondering whether you plan to endorse a candidate, and I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
Yes, Sandra, thank you for the question, and that's a real easy one to answer. I do not. Now, I don't want to be disingenuous, so I want to be very, very clear. I don't think my proper role is to endorse a candidate, so I'm not found on anyone's list. There's no bumper sticker on my car. There's no sign in my front yard. But if you listen to this program, you know, I think, or have come to know what I expect from a candidate. I will support only those candidates who hold to the sanctity of marriage, the sanctity of the family, the sanctity of human life, the protection of human life at every level, from conception until natural death, and a host of other issues as well. And that means it's a very narrow list. And I will be absolutely honest to say that Governor Romney is one of the few candidates who fits within that set of criteria. I would also say he's not the only one, in the sense that there are other candidates who obviously are vying for, competing for, the votes of someone like myself and like so many other listeners to this program. The question now comes, as we're about 5 weeks out from the Iowa caucuses, and as we're looking at this race getting very tight, very fast, who will evangelicals decide to support in such numbers that we can make a difference? And will that decision be made upon matters of politics and matters of calculation about beliefs and convictions and policies and platform and electability? Or does the issue of Mormonism really loom large in that equation? Governor Romney gave the speech because he hopes to change some minds. I'm interested to know if he did. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. Russ Moore, what do you think that Governor Romney did accomplish in this speech?
I think he accomplished saying, this is really who I am, this is really what I believe, and I'm willing to make a stand here and to say this. And you have someone who's being accused of kind of flip-flopping on some really key issues and of not really being a man of conviction. I think he did a lot to show in this. I really am making a statement that this is who I am. I can lose the presidency over this. I think that was an important point to be made.
Well, he certainly did say it. He said, if this costs me the election, then so be it. And I thought at that point he really was staking his entire political future on this speech.
And I think that's obviously true. He has not backed down from affirming Mormonism at all. He's been given many opportunities and just hasn't done it.
And he's not an incidental Mormon. I mean, this is a man raised in a Mormon family from a Mormon heritage who was a Mormon missionary as a young man and was a Mormon bishop at a point in his adult life and is now saying, yes, I'm a Mormon. Deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he went on to say some things. He went on to frame his public philosophy and to say, this really grows out of my Mormon beliefs. And then this is where I want us to talk when we came back. He really made an appeal to what's called American civil religion. He really said there's an essential core that we should expect of each other in terms of these beliefs. And he said, I really fit that civil religion core. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Back with your calls. I'm Albert Moeller.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. We're going to go very quickly to calls. I want to get in as many as possible. If you heard the governor's speech or if you heard about it and you're ready to talk about it, this is the place to have an intelligent Christian conversation. And, I can't say everything I would want to say in the course of this program. We've already done several editions of this program dedicated to the could you vote for a Mormon president, Mormon candidate question. We've done it on Mormonism. And so we're really not just talking about could you, would you ever vote for a Mormon candidate. We're not talking about Mormonism. We've made that very clear. It's a non-Christian belief system that I believe is an anti-gospel that leads persons away from the only gospel that saves and deludes them. At the same time, I'd also have to admit that there are Mormons who would make very good neighbors. Those are two very different questions in terms of their family values and all the rest. And this is where, in this 2008 race, presidential candidacies and the whole political process are requiring evangelical Christians to think in a more complicated and sophisticated way. Let's go to Marlborough, Massachusetts, where Joanne is on the line listening on XM170. Go ahead, Joanne.
Yes, Albert, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to let you know that I live in Massachusetts. I am a evangelical Christian. And I have voted for Mitt Romney for governor for two of his terms. He was a man who stood up to our legislative body, who did not let the people vote on the gay marriage rights. And he stood up to them, even though they overrode him on his decisions. I appreciate the fact that he has defended pro-choice. Yes, he was. He was pro-life. He was pro-choice at one time. And as he was about to sign the bill, he changed his mind and realized that he was wrong. And in fact, admitted it on one of his debates. So, again, here I am, an evangelical Christian. I would love to see a candidate come out and be as strong as and with integrity and everything else that Mitt Romney is. But, again, it's somebody who, yes, doesn't believe what I believe, but he is a man of integrity. He is firm, and he stands for a lot of the things that I do stand for as far as social issues.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to say that your conversation is wonderful and talking about are there people that maybe don't believe everything that we believe that are lost but still make good candidates for our political body.
You know, Joanne, I appreciate your call. One of the things that strikes me is that, of course, you're calling from Massachusetts. You mentioned you had an opportunity twice to vote for Mitt Romney. You've had to think this through before. If you're an American evangelical Christian living in Western states like Idaho, Nevada, not to mention Utah, Montana even, you've been thinking about this for a long time because you've been facing Mormon candidates and you've been thinking about how to process this. But an awful lot of American evangelicals are facing this for the very first time, seriously. And that has not only to do with that chronology, but also with the fact that an awful lot of evangelical Christians right now are young people who haven't had to think even through the Catholic question with John F. Kennedy. I was a year old. Not even, actually, when John F. Kennedy gave that speech. So we're having to think these things through in a new context. Let's go to New Haven, Connecticut, where Jamie's on the line, also listening on XM170. Go ahead, Jamie. All right, we lost Jamie. We're going to go to Chicago, Illinois, and talk to Daniel, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Daniel.
Hi, I just wanted to first say that I'm a Mormon. I do believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in the Bible. I believe that Jesus Christ is my Savior. But on that, in terms of Mitt Romney, there are things about Mitt Romney that I don't necessarily agree with, just like there's things that I don't necessarily agree with other Mormon public figures like Harry Reid and Orrin Hatch. But that said, I do believe what the Bible says when it talks about being able to, you know, judge a good tree by its fruit. And when I look at Mitt Romney and I see the things that he's accomplished in his life as a family man in industry and in the public sector, I see someone that's done a lot of good and has stood up for a lot of the values that not only Mormons hold, but Christians in general.
Okay, Daniel, excuse me. I have to ask you a question, so forgive my interruption, but you're the only caller thus far that I can ask this question. You were a Mormon listening to Mitt Romney's speech. Did you hear what you wanted to hear, or is there anything you heard that caused you any kind of problem in his speech?
No, not necessarily. The thing is, I understand where he's coming from. I understand that he has to really walk a fine line because a lot of people are looking at him with a lot of judgment. So I thought he did a great job. It's difficult to really throw any plugs out for him because I am a Mormon and I feel like I'm just biased, but I do think he has a lot of great things to offer to the nation. And if he wasn't a Mormon, I would definitely vote for him. And okay. I think if he wasn't a Mormon, he would be a shoo-in for the presidency because of his background.
Okay, I really appreciate your call, Daniel, and I appreciate your straightforwardness, both in listening to the program and joining the discussion as a Mormon. Now, Russ Moore, we were just listening to this, and I was interested to see what Daniel would say about mm-hmm. my question.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to something. You know, this is where I think, again, we as evangelicals have to be really discerning and careful. You heard what Daniel said about believing in Jesus yeah. Christ as his Savior and yeah. believing in the Bible, and Mitt Romney made very similar statements. And I just want to be clear that as a Christian theologian, I understand that as a Mormon they can say that, but I also understand that as Mormons, when they say that, and I understand the integrity of heart with which they would say it,
mm-hmm.
Consistent with Mormon theology, it's not what I mean when I say it.
It's self-deceiving, and you and I talked on the telephone right after the Mitt Romney speech, and I said to you then, the only disappointment for me in the speech is when he said, I believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God, because he knows that is not what Christians mean when they say Jesus Christ is the Son of God. It's a very different thing, and it really confuses the issue. I would prefer a Mormon to say, hey, listen, this is where I am honestly. This is where you are honestly. Let's come together and talk about these things.
And I think in general, that's what Governor Romney
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, here again, you start looking at what was loaded into this speech in terms of expectation,
yeah.
And no one was going to walk away having heard everything you wanted to hear. I agree with that, and that's why I really appreciate Daniel calling. I appreciate Governor Romney giving the speech, and I appreciate having a freedom, a constitutionally protected freedom, for me to say, I think on the Christology issue, I think on the issue of the gospel, I think they're just flat wrong.
Yeah.
I say that not because I dislike them, but because I love them enough to tell them what I honestly yeah. believe to be true.
And they're Christians who have many times been walking with Mormons in pro-life rallies and then turning around and saying, here's a gospel tract.
Right, and you know what? We're going to have to grow up as evangelicals to understand how to be discerning and courageous and courteous, but also truthful. And I think it's also, and this is where Daniel's call really, I think, kind of reaches me at one level. I think Mormons are having to learn a whole lot during this time, too. This might be a new opportunity for some Mormon Christian conversation that, from the Christian perspective, unabashedly, unashamedly, has got to be more about the gospel than about Mitt Romney. But right now, that's the question, and that's what we're talking about. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Miller Program.
It's important to recognize that while differences in theology exist between the churches in America, we share a common creed of moral convictions. And where the affairs of our nation are concerned, it's usually a sound rule to focus on the latter, on the great moral principles that urge us all on a common course. Whether it was the cause of abolition, or civil rights, or the right to life itself, no movement of conscience can succeed in America that cannot speak to the convictions of religious people.
You're listening there to former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney running for the Republican presidential nomination. And you heard him today at the George H.W. Presidential Library, George H.W. Bush Presidential Library in College Station, Texas. I want to get to one final issue here. What you really heard there was Mitt Romney giving a distillation of American civil religion as it's known. In other words, here's shared beliefs, the kind of beliefs that are reflected in the Declaration of Independence, the kind of beliefs that are united in such things as the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, the kind of expectations we have. He says it comes down to moral principles, moral convictions. He said we should lean into that rather than into theological differences when electing a president. Now, I am one of those who is quick to say civil religion can never save. No one's going to be saved by American civil religion. There's no gospel in it. But I'm also going to be honest to say that American civil religion, when you contrast it with the secularism of Europe, is something for which we should at least be thankful in creating a base of moral consensus that, at least at this point, has not been totally eroded by secularism. Russ Moore, does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you have leaders who are accommodating to the religious beliefs and instincts of the American people, rather than having something that is substituting revealed religion and Christianity, which is what has happened in many mainline Protestant churches. You have American civil religion that substitutes for the gospel itself. That's a fine line to walk and to consider. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that, again, requires evangelicals to think more carefully than we have in the past. Mm-hmm. Because an awful lot of evangelicals hear an affirmation of civil religion and say, hey, he's one of us.
Right.
That's just not true.
That's exactly right. That's why we've been so enthusiastic over candidates who don't even go to church as Christians.
Right. And we think they're Christians because they simply associate with the civil religion. The flip side of that coin is that civil religion, that very core of moral convictions to which Governor Romney speaks, a core that I believe is being eroded by postmodernism, by moral relativism, by secularism, and simply by consumerism and popular culture, is still that which allows Americans to talk to each other meaningfully about many moral issues in conversations you couldn't have in a place like secularized Europe.
Oh, that's exactly right. We have to be able to even have the conversation to say, let's talk about what we believe and why we ought to have justice and liberty and life.
As on all important issues, in this program today, we have started a conversation. We didn't end it. We'll continue it in days ahead. Let me know what you think by writing me at mail@albertmuller.com. We're always glad to hear from you. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.